Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Yes, you are, and it's July 10th.
And you are?
I'm Michael Sterling. Who are you?
I'm just a sweet transvestite. That's who I am.
Oh, really? Harkening no, back
am,
to...
I am not Michael Sterling, no. I am,
Rocky yeah. Horror Picture.
Mm-hmm. Huh? Yes, yes. I am Paul Strolley, Michael Sterling. Yes, it is July 10th.
It is July 10th. It's a significant day. A lot of friends of mine are born on this day for some reason.
Really?
Yeah, so I'm buying lots of presents today.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes, it's interesting you should say that. It is a week away from my 50th birthday.
That's right.
Yes,
it is, isn't it?
A week away.
The
yes.
17th.
Yes, isn't that magical?
Very.
I'm all a tither.
You don't look a day over 60,
Thank
but that's
you.
Another
lady,
story.
Lady, we're here all week. Thank you so much. Yes.
There you go,
thank our sponsors, Michael.
We will do that. We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. And to learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar. Throw some applause their way.
Yes, indeed. And you know.
Yes. Questions get harder as we continue.
I inadvertently took two pages and turned them over, and I shouldn't have done that.
Oh. But I was. What, you mean this isn't all extemporaneous? Don't ruin the magic, Michael. Don't let him peek behind the curtain.
I know. Here's, we've got a very special show for you, ladies and gentlemen, today. Juber Productions, in association with Green Door Productions, presents the world premiere comedy Without a Net, a risky, funny, fast-paced comedy set in an improv class. The richly drawn characters play, laugh, have affairs, uncover secrets, and become a hilarious ensemble, performing their own improvised finale. With a script by celebrated character actor and improv coach Jeff Duchette, and Hope Juber, each show is a unique hybrid of scripted and improv performance, featuring a cast of accomplished performers culled from The Groundlings, Second City, 10 West, Upright, Citizens Brigade, The Spoilin' Players, and Schplotzy.
Schplotz, I think.
Schplotzy. Yes.
And I think it's I.O. West for Improv Olympic.
Oh, yes, very, yes, very interesting. Yes. Okay. Yep. Among others.
Grammy-winning guitarist Lawrence Juber will be playing live during the show, including a sort of a curtain-warmer mini-concert as the doors open. Those doors open for the first time tonight, as well as having a second opening next Thursday, because there's two casts that do this on the immortal July 17th, at the Whitefire Theater in Sherman Oaks. We're delighted to have the casting director, the co-writer, the producer, and the composer all wrapped up in two people who are in studio guests today. Please welcome Hope Juber and Lawrence Juber.
Welcome, guys.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Thank you. We're very, very excited to have you here. Before we start talking about this, I was telling them in the green room beforehand that this area, just before we get to actually talking about the show, this area of Sherman Oaks, especially where the Whitefire is one of the great places to see a show in town.
That's right.
Because it's one of those places, even though, and they say in their promotional material, leave 15 minutes for parking, because parking can be a little tight there. But what I always do when I go there earlier, exploit, have dinner beforehand. There's about a dozen places you can walk to within walking distance of the Whitefire. And you utilize the valet parking that you'd be paying for anyway with the local restaurants. The Greek place is there, which is a couple of blocks
across
east.
The
Boneyard Bistro is directly across the street.
I think the Boneyard went south.
Really?
No.
Oh, is it still there?
Oh, yeah.
And it's always humming when I'm there.
Is
and
it?
They pour a good cocktail there, which, as you know, it's very important to me. Perhaps a little too important. But that's another show.
I'm glad it's a real cocktail. The Boneyard is there because somebody said it's gone. I said, really? I don't know about that.
No, it's just and the pulled pork sandwich that they have is like to die for.
Well, that's fantastic. A great area, and you know, becoming a little bit of Theater Row in that area there. We've had a couple other things. A
couple of other
street.
Places, yeah. That's so great. How was your week, Michael?
You know, it was good. Thanks for asking. We're going to talk about this in our arts calendar, but I've been knee-deep in a very classic American Broadway show called Damn Yankees.
Which, yes, a classic.
Promoting for 3D Theatricals, which is one of Southern California's most prominent producing entities in Orange County at the beautiful Plummer Theater, very historic theater in Fullerton, California, about 1,300-1,400 seats. And then it bicycles after it's run there over to Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center. Basically, this production company, 3D Theatricals, came in and saved these two theaters from going under.
Oh, great.
So they have captured their subscription base and built onto that and bringing them, you know, big title shows down there. Broadway caliber production, which is very exciting always to see that on a regional theater stage.
And the runs are so brief, too. It's like astonishing. They do, I mean...
Well, they do 3 weeks at Fullerton, and then they do 2 weeks at... And when I say that, I'm talking weekends, not full
right
through the week, because that's hard
to
do.
No, I've seen two productions there. They're phenomenal.
Yeah, good that's been pretty much my MO. And then, of course, Sterling's upstairs at the Federal and doing a great show last weekend with Critcherland Records and saluting off... Broadway music. Actually.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
Yeah. It was a
good. I wish I had your life, man.
Do you?
You're so exciting. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm turning 50.
It comes
50.
Completely
with
all my
That's
bills
all I got. And
you
everything. Know, it didn't bother me at all. 50 didn't bother me at all until yesterday, because my wife Monica, did this amazing thing. It's a great idea for a gift. She sent notes out for people to send stories and memories and experiences that they had with me. And we read like a couple a day. It was like the 50 countdown to 50. So for 50 days from my birthday, we read a couple of these notes, and some of them are poignant and some of them are funny and some of them are silly. And then you get days like yesterday when I get the AARP and the colonoscopy reminder in the same packet of mail.
Oh,
and those two things come in the same day. It's like, okay. All right. That was a little, that was a bit much.
Welcome to life.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yes, but let's talk about far, far nicer things than what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
Our first guest was internationally recognized as lead guitarist in Beatle Paul McCartney's band Wings and has since established himself as a world-renowned guitar virtuoso, composer, and arranger. As a studio musician, he can be heard on recordings from artists as diverse as Dan Hicks and the Hot Licks, Seal, and Barry Manilow, and is featured on the soundtrack to hundreds of TV shows and movies, including the Academy Award-winning Dirty Dancing, Good Will Hunting, and Pocahontas. He co-composed the soundtrack of the award-winning video game Diablo 3, it was huge, and crafted the score to the NBC Dateline documentary Children of the Harvest. His music is also featured in the Ken Burns documentary The 10th Inning, as well as being featured live in Without Annette, the fast-paced comedy opening tonight and next week at the Whitefire, as we mentioned earlier. He is also producer of that production, so in short, this man has no free time, but he did make some free time for us today. Please welcome Lawrence Schuber.
Thank you.
Welcome,
sir.
Thanks a lot. Luckily, you're around the corner. Hmm? Yeah, because we live in
I know,
Studio
it's kind of convenient.
Oh, really? So you could have walked over. Oh.
Almost.
Yeah. Well, thank you. As I said to you both earlier, with you opening tonight and opening again next week, we so appreciate you finding the time to join us here and talk about this production. My first thought is, what can you give us sort of a little synopsis? I guess my biggest question is, how improv'd is it? Is there a structured narrative, or how does it work?
This is a question better answered by Hope.
Okay.
But just from the producer perspective, you know, and being a producer, as you know, Michael, is you know, writing checks and spreadsheets. And it's not glamorous.
Right.
But it's a play. It's a real play.
Right.
But it's set in an improv class.
Okay. And being that it is set in the improv class, within the structure of the play, the exercises that the students of the improv class do are improvised.
Oh, okay.
They're different every night. And then those people that you've now come to know, the people who are taking the improv class, they do their own improv show at the end, which is completely improvised. But the characters, the plot line, it's all a scripted play, but with room for improv. And one of the most interesting things that's happened over the last few weeks when we had our previews and people came to see the show is people didn't know which parts were actually improvised.
Yeah. Well, that's the best compliment you can be paid.
Yes, a good sign.
Yeah. I mean, we have some amazing performers in there. Performers, as you said, culled from like the best improv schools and improv organizations in
Los
Angeles.
Like a who's who of improv school, you know, the cream of the crop in
and
terms
that's
of
how
improv.
We cast it. Yeah. When we went to cast this show, I basically sat down with a telephone and an email thing and sent out my request to all the improv places, send me your best people. Oh. And we just had hundreds of responses, and it was just an amazing process.
And you have the amazing Bill Cott in it, who's a friend of mine, and he also did recently did I Love Lucy Live, which we talked about.
Yes,
on this.
Of course.
He and I did a film together about 20 years ago in Chicago called Ben Day. He's a hysterical man and a fine, fine gentleman as well. Lawrence, let me ask you, the implementation of music, it's not a musical, but the obvious, you play music live accompanying it as sort of interstitial music or to punctuate?
Yeah, interstitial. It's like transitions.
Okay.
So I'm not really underscore because it doesn't make sense to have music during the scenes.
Right, okay.
Because it's a class. So.
Oh, gotcha.
But in between scenes, I'm the man behind the curtain.
Okay.
And is, live.
And is that stuff, do you... Is that something with a musician as accomplished as yourself? Is that something where you go with, you know, written material? Do you play? Do you improvise?
Yes.
Okay. A little, okay.
I mean, I've structured, I've given myself kind of zones, musical zones to occupy. But,
okay.
And there's a theme that I've developed, but the... Within each one of those zones, there's room for improvisation because that's the spirit of what we're doing. It kind of just keeps it in that realm. And, you know, the nuance with this show is that during the improvisations, it's still the characters that are doing the improvisations. So they have a certain agenda to accomplish. So
it's
kind of an improv within a play, except when they get to the finale, which is, you know, the show that this group put on, and then they have a little more freedom just to do more straightforward improv.
Gotcha.
But they still have to improvise from their character's point of view.
Sure, sure, yeah. But isn't, you know, that's a very good point, because it would almost be unfair for you to be locked into a structured musical theme when so much is being created in the moment that it could actually, written music could hobble what is happening on stage. You know?
Yes and no, because the again, I have to stress, it's a play. It's very much a scripted play, so there's structure to
it. You have that narrative you have to adhere to.
Yeah, and so the music is kind of enhancing the narrative. But during the improv show, there's room for me to throw in some underscore or, to improvise a transition, because that's more of a free form.
Okay.
Free-flowing thing.
Gotcha.
But I want to make a musical analogy with this, because, what really appealed to me about this show when Hope first proposed it is how much it's kind of analogous to big band jazz, that you have an ensemble, you have written, arranged material that everybody plays and, contributes to as a group, but then there's room for riffs, there's room for solos, there's room for flexibility, and it's really, it works just fantastically on that level because we have such great performers.
Well, there's so many parallels between comedy and music, too. The musicality, playing with other people, playing off other people. When I was in college, I used to work with this gentleman named Jeff Ayers, and who we've had on the show. And we had a group called the Disposable Giggle Twins, and it was juggling and comedy. And juggling, too, is the same thing. It's just sort of like whatever's coming at you, you just sort of handle, and you just keep it aloft, and you just keep it going. But so many parallels between music and comedy. I've always thought that.
Yeah, it's true. The best improvisers in music, from my experience, are those that really listen. Mm. They're not bringing they're not bringing their own agenda, but they're actually in the musical moment. And the same thing with this kind of improvisation. It's being in that moment.
Well, I was going to say, coming from the background, you have, of course, a family who is well known for its creativity and writing. And
this is Hope.
We're talking to Hope.
Yes, to Hope. And with writing, and you're a writer, and you've been doing that for many years, and you have an interest in theater, and, of course, you appreciate music. And Lawrence, when did you and Hope kind of merge on this level of doing theater together? When did your interest peak with this?
Well, we met in the spring of 1981. Mm-hmm. And curiously enough, we met at Catch a Rising Star in New York, the comedy club.
Right. Wow.
I picked her up in the bar. It's a longer story. But very soon
But it was Catch a Rising Star. It wasn't a saloon, okay?
Yeah, it was a cool place. But very soon thereafter, she started talking to me about this idea she had for a comedy rock and roll band, which became The Housewives, mm-hmm. which she was very active performing with during the 80s, and then it developed and eventually became a musical. And so right from the beginning, there was this kind of this fusion of our different interests. But, you know, it was weird for me because coming from this kind of Beatles, Wings background, having been in Wings and kind of, you know, what in America you call the British invasion, I guess. And then kind of finding myself at this weird nexus of pop culture where Hope, you know, with her dad being Sherwood Schwartz, creating Gilligan's Island and the Brady Bunch, and you know, so it's like Wings. Gilligan's Island, you know, it's like this kind of weird place to be, but it works because we share both musical and theatrical sensibilities, and I had very little experience as a in theater, other than, you know, when I was in high school donning a pair of tights and a lute and playing in Measure for Measure and, you know, being kind of the minstrel.
Did you have an appreciation of American pop culture before you were here, either musical or comedy or
barely know, musical but, yes yeah. But more rock culture than pop culture. And I mean, I saw my first episode of Gilligan's Island and my first Dodger game the same day. You know, it was like, you know,
I think you proposed that night.
Yeah. Okay, this is not so bad. I think I can stay here.
You know, I found it interesting to learn. I just learned this recently, but your father, Sherwood Schwartz, was composed also the theme song. Speaking of musical influence, composed both the theme songs for those
Gilligan's
shows as well.
And Brady.
Yes,
Gilligan's and Brady Bunch.
And Brady Bunch. Yes, yeah. Two of the most well known songs I think in all of America. And more people know the words to the Gilligan's Island theme than the national anthem, I believe.
Have you heard Stairway to Gilligan?
I have. I love that.
We have a 45.
Little
Roger and the Goosebumps.
Yes, it's a hybrid of the two, Stairway to Heaven, and with the lyrics from Gilligan's Island.
Well, lucky thing for all of us and for me and my family, my dad had an extraordinary sense of humor and just loved stuff like that. Yeah. So, yeah.
You know, interestingly enough, we have another tie to the Brady Bunch. Gary Marsh, who owns Breakdown Services, which sponsors this show, was a child and a teen actor. He's actually at the end of the film Camelot with Richard Harris. He's the boy that they have this, that Richard Harris has that final scene with in Camelot. And he was one of the guys who tried to get Greg Brady to start smoking. Gary was one of the
that
in a band.
Boy.
Yes. But
I was Greg's girlfriend.
Yes, I saw it. Rachel.
Yes.
Oh,
and a little more synergy. Susan Olsen has a show.
Yes, Susan Olsen has a show on our network here.
Not of her own,
along with Sheena Metal, who's
with Sheena.
I wanted to ask you, Lawrence, and I know it's sort of a trite question that you've probably answered 100 million times, but I'm always curious about someone with your musical proficiency, what your influences are. Are they more, is it rock and roll? Is it, where do you go? Is it blues? Is it jazz? Where? What's your bliss, really, musically?
It's all of it.
Really?
It's music. I mean, I started playing in November of 1963. Which was like the peak of Beatlemania in England. That was really where it kind of crested.
Right.
So we got it a little before you had your Ed Sullivan moment here. But I very quickly, once I picked up the guitar and I realized that there was all this other kind of music, I just started, you know, developing a passion for music in general. Right. And so, you know, I've got, you know, shelves and shelves of vinyl that, you know, go from classical through blues and jazz and folk and, you know.
Still your preferred format, vinyl? Still?
It sounds better.
It does.
Yeah, in fact, my last album, I put a vinyl version of it.
Yeah. Really?
Did an in-store up at Freak Beat Records, too. You know, our local purveyor of fine vinyl.
Obviously, we're going to talk more about the show without Annette, but I wanted to ask you, too, about this the photographic memoir that you have. Is it just released now, Guitar with Wings?
It just came out, yeah. With Wings.
And that's with the... can you give our listeners sort of a little breakdown about what that is, just your experiences?
Well, it's kind of biographical, in that there's a lot of background information about how I got into music and my influences, mm-hmm. and then my career as a studio musician in London before I joined Wings. And then when I joined the group, I got a camera. And following Linda McCartney's example, I took a lot of photographs, which then sat in shoeboxes for over 30 years. And I was offered a publishing deal, and it was, okay, well, you know, I don't really want to write a book, but let me see what happens. And and then a year later, I had a book, a coffee table book, and it just came out. Monday night, the 14th, I'll be doing a thing at the Grammy Museum.
Oh, okay.
Doing a Q&A and a mini concert and showing some slides.
And the general public is open to that?
Yeah, that's open.
Okay,
to
and that is on, information on that is on your website, probably?
It is indeed.
Okay, and that's for those that are listening, Lawrence is spelled Laurence, last name Juber.com, and we'll throw that website information out a couple more times before the end of the
year. You know what, and at this particular juncture, I'm going to talk about the how they can see Without a Net. We'll mention it again later in the show, but of course, as we said earlier, it opens this evening, July 10th, with a second opening on July 17th. Both shows at 8 p.m. It's a double cast show with two different opening nights. And it runs Thursdays, July 10th through October 2nd, dark only one date, which is September 25th. Previews have passed now that it's in an opening mode. So you can get your tickets by simply calling 323-960-5773 or go to plays411.com. Charming Theater, the Whitefire Theater, in a wonderful section of Sherman Oaks at 13500 Ventura Boulevard. Metered parking on the street, side street parking. It's all there for your convenience. And don't miss this. It sounds...
Go early.
Eat nearby.
Patronize one of the phenomenal restaurants out there. Leave your car with the valet parking. You're fine. And obviously, you check per place, but for the most of that's what I always did when we were doing a show there. Brian, is it Rasmussen who runs the place? We did a show there with Sea Glass Theater a couple of years ago.
Yes,
we did a
did.
Production of Kvetch there that
that's
was
right.
a huge hit for us.
Yeah.
And that's how I'm so familiar with the... culinary options in that area, spending 6 weeks at that theater. But love it over there. Love
I did my musical It's the Housewives there.
Oh, really?
Yes, you did.
Yeah. No, it's a great space. I love the Whitefire space.
And that's in and around the time, Hope, that we all met, because
right.
Jamie Lake, who is our mutual friend,
who
has been out on the road with
Lucy. I love Lucy Live.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Such a lovely girl, and married her sweetheart, Harley J.
Yes.
Two good-looking people, those
people, my gosh,
right?
What a couple.
Two talented people.
Yeah, picture their kids.
Not unlike yourselves. Yeah, exactly.
Lawrence played at the wedding.
Did you?
I played at the wedding, yeah.
Wow. You know, you've got this beautiful, beautiful hair this man has, right? Beautiful gray hair, silver hair, very distinctive.
They both have beautiful hair.
And I see that that's something that's been a kind of a trademark in your life. Look at this head of hair right here, right?
Yeah, I was blessed with hair.
Boy, oh boy, yeah, were you ever. Good for you.
I've been very, very lucky. There's a picture of my father and my brother and I, and I had a full beard at the time, and my brother had a mustache and my dad was clean shaven, but we look so much alike that we just captioned it "The Werewolf Getting Closer to Midnight." It just looked like the same person, just sort of expanding, you know. Let's do our arts calendar, Michael,
okay.
And now we can chat with both of these fine people and let Hope fill us in a little bit on the significance of the title, which we're interested about.
Absolutely. Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen. Set in Washington, D.C. during the 1950s and based on a novel by Douglas Wallop, Douglas Wallop. Well, Paul, you have double written this here. I'm going to start again.
Oh, it's not double Douglas Wallop novel?
It's a novel by Douglas Wallop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Hey,
so,
man, I just type what you send me.
Sorry. At any rate, let me start over. Set in Washington, D.C. during the 1950s and based on a novel by Douglas Wallop, married middle-aged real estate agent Joe Boyd is a long-suffering fan of the Washington Senators. He says, "I'd sell my soul for one long ball hitter." Soon enough, the devil, disguised as a smooth-talking salesman named Mr. Applegate, appears at Joe's door. Applegate offers to turn Joe into a 22-year-old phenom called Joe Hardy, but all, of course, for a price. Joe must leave his beloved wife, Meg, and the rest of his suburban life behind. As the Senator's stats soar, Joe realizes he's losing his wife and his boyish good looks and begins searching for a loophole in his contract. Dogged by suspicious sports writer Gloria Thorpe and tempted by Applegate's sizzling hot seductress, Lola, a character member of the Homewreckers Hall of Fame, will Joe live to regret fulfilling his dreams of baseball glory? Well, that's one hell of a question, but we're not going to tell you about. The answer is...
Just in time for the country's favorite pastime, the Ovation Award-winning 3D Theatricals of Orange County, California will present a rousing revival of the eternally effervescent American Broadway classic Damn Yankees at the historic Plummer Auditorium in Fullerton, California from July 11th to July 27th for 11 performances, and will also present an additional 6 performances at South Bay's Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center, oddly enough, in Redondo Beach, California. That was convenient. Mm-hmm. August 2nd to the 10th, 2014. Online ticketing for both shows available at 3DTShows.com or by calling 714-589-2770. That's 3DTShows.com, 714-589-2770. And, of course, we will throw this information out before the end of the hour
absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely.
Michael, would you be kind enough to introduce a lovely lady to my right?
I will. Our next guest, we've been talking with her already, but we're going to give her a proper formal introduction. Our next guest was born and raised in Los Angeles. Her first professional entertainment experience was playing Rachel, a recurring role as Greg Brady's girlfriend on The Brady Bunch. After graduating college with a BA in theater, she joined her father, Sherwood Schwartz, famed creator of Gilligan's Island and The Brady Bunch, as a writer. She quickly became a story editor at Paramount, working on situation comedies. During a brief hiatus, she went to New York, where she met and subsequently married our other guest here today, Lawrence Juber. Wanting to combine her comedy writing with Lawrence's rock and roll music and being inspired while caring for the first of their two children, she created a comedy rock and roll band called The Housewives, which she just mentioned, which played at rock and comedy clubs around Los Angeles. Along with national TV appearances, she then focused on writing musicals, penning 4 storybook theater of Los Angeles. I'm sorry, penning 4 storybook theater.
And that
Los
one
Angeles,
I didn't put in twice. I spelled them different ways for
of
you.
Which were Mother Goose, the musical, and The Princess and the Frog. And they won the Artistic Director Achievement Award for Best Original Children's Musical. With Lawrence, she wrote the score to Gilligan's Island, the musical, and they combined their talents again for Without Annette, opening, as we have said, tonight at the Whitefire Theater in Sherman Oaks. Please welcome Hope Juber.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
We brought a
welcome
proper
home.
Audience for you.
Yes, we did.
huge crowd.
Yeah. So now here's the thing. Our listeners don't know this because they're not reading this. They're only hearing it. But it's not Without Annette. It's Without Annette, as in a woman's name,
yes.
Annette. And what is the significance of that? Can you share it? Is it something you are okay revealing? Do you not want to reveal it? Or how does it go?
There's parts I'll reveal and parts I won't.
Okay.
Well, because this is an improv workshop, the whole play takes place within an improv workshop. There is a list of people who are supposed to be attending the workshop, and when they start, the teacher comes in and starts the workshop, they call for the people who are there, and there's somebody named Annette who is not there.
Okay.
And so they have to go on without Annette.
Okay.
And there is a surprise about that at the end of the play, which I won't reveal.
Okay, good.
But it's to also indicate the fact that without a net, that okay. improvisation, you're it's very risky because you never know what's going to happen.
Sure,
and
sure.
Some of it depends on audience suggestions and will change every night. So there is literally no net, and there is also no Annette.
it's without Annette and without Annette.
Yes.
Do you enjoy, I've noticed with the amount of stuff that you've written, is improv a part of your creative process in building things? Is this just sort of isolated introduction of improv? How big a part of your creative world is improvisation?
Improv is very important to me. Mm-hmm. It actually started when I was about 13 years old. I heard of a group called The Committee, which was an improv group up in San Francisco. Mm. And I really, really wanted to see this improv group. So my friend Cindy and I, who were both kind of anxious to see this kind of world-famous group, asked my parents, and I said, can I go to San Francisco and see this group? And I was 13, and she was 13, and we wanted to get on a bus and go to San Francisco and see The Committee. And, of course, I asked my parents, and they said, sure. which was absolutely astounding to me.
So it was a forgiving time, wasn't it?
Well, we got on the bus, and my parents were there, and they put us on this bus to San Francisco, two 13-year-old girls, and we are going up to San Francisco. We get to San Francisco, get off the bus, and there are my parents. So they had no intention of letting us go to San Francisco.
Wonderful.
They just wanted us to have that kind of adventure. So we were there, and my folks, they said, we've made the arrangements to go see the committee. So we went to see the committee. And
were they at the Hungry Eye? Is that where they played?
I don't remember. It was not in a great area of town. I know that.
Maybe in North Beach?
It could be. Yeah. I don't know.
But I was just curious.
We saw the show, and we were specifically astounded by this one performer who was just amazing. And I asked for his autograph. He signed a napkin. And we went back to the hotel, and my parents went to their room, and I went with Cindy to my room. And I said, you know, Cindy, there's a midnight show. And Cindy said, you want to go to the midnight show? I said, sure. So we got in a cab, these two 13-year-old girls, and we took a cab down, and we went to see this show.
Of course, the cab was driven by your parents.
No. They had no idea. They still don't. So, Mom, I'm sorry, but this is what we did. So we got there, and we saw the second show, and the guy that we were just like crazy about, who was just so talented, said, are you two 13-year-old girls here alone? And we said, well, yeah. And he said, this is not okay with me. And he put us in a cab, told the driver where to get us back to the hotel, and sent us back. Well, this was about, I don't know how old I am, but many, many years ago. Okay. So when I started The Housewives and I wanted to involve character in the repartee of the group on stage, right. I was asking around if there were any improv coaches. And I was given this one name, and I said, oh, this looks kind of familiar. And I called him up, and he came over, and in walks Gary Austin, who was the founder of the Groundlings Theater. And that was the guy in the committee.
Who put you in a cab.
Yes. Yeah. And I said, hold on a minute. And I went in the other room, and I grabbed the napkin. I knew exactly where it was, because it had always been really important to me. And I came out, and I said, look at this. And he said, where did you get that? I said, well, many years ago, I was 13. He said, two 13-year-old girls alone? And I said, yeah. He said, oh, my God.
Wow. So he remembered it, too.
He remembered it, too. Wow. And I started taking improvisation classes and workshops with Gary. And then he turned the class over because he started doing national workshops and going to all different places. And he turned his local class over to a guy named Jeff Doucette. And he was my improv teacher. And I was just always interested in the process of the now-to-now moment and also what it did to a writer. Because I love working with a partner. I love being thrown left curves and just made to think in ways that I wouldn't necessarily think that you would have to adapt to.
Well, it harkens back to what Lawrence said about that great collaborative sense of musicians and music and comedy.
Absolutely.
You get better stuff. You just get better stuff, yeah.
So when I was in Jeff's class and I was looking around the class one day and I thought, every single one of us in the class has a different reason for being here. I think that is the basis for a play. So that's how Without an Episode.
And now Jeff Doucette is how you say the last name. And that's your co-writer on
this.
And the director. Writing and director.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the writing process of this with him, was it the two of you? Was it workshoppy? Did you work with other people? Was it just the two of you working?
It was just the two of us. Okay. And I always like to write as a writer with another writer in the room. I like the way that the back and forth thing happens, and I just really enjoy that process.
It energizes the process too.
Oh yeah. And it just makes you laugh. So Jeff would come over, and we just would back and forth, and we rewrote this show, and just had an amazing time doing it. And always knew we wrote the improvisations within it, but we always knew that come to a real production, that they would be improvised. This was just a kind of an example of something that could happen. Especially there are certain tasks that each character has to accomplish during the improv that are part of their character's growth. So it's an interesting exercise for the actors, because whatever is thrown at them, they then have to apply not only their character that they're playing, but the tasks that we've assigned them.
Right, right. Now,
I have one point to clarify. Where were your parents after they met you at the bus? Did they not stay in San Francisco?
Oh, they stayed in San Francisco.
So they kept an eye on you?
Well, they didn't know we snuck out.
Oh, there, I see.
So. Yeah, we snuck out for the second show.
All right.
But the rest of it, we were with my folks the whole time.
Okay. What a precious story. Right. And how kind of your parents to allow you at that young age to do something that you wanted to do like that.
Yeah, when they said yes, I wasn't even expecting it. I just thought, well, I'll ask my folks. And
that's one of those things that you're not really sure you want that answer.
Yeah.
It's like, they're really okay with me doing this?
It was such a Brady moment, too, getting off the bus and there are my parents.
Exactly. You could have said that better.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Back to Without a Net, the creative process of building it. At what point did you realize, more importantly, at what point did you start contributing, Lawrence? Like, did you obviously you knew music was going to be an element in it, but did you have any sort of did Lawrence have any sort of creative input in terms of the assemblage of the show?
The biggest thing was agreeing that yes, let's do it. It's like, okay, I'll pull out the checkbook and we'll start the process. Right. The music really didn't even start to integrate until we were into rehearsals. And then, when I got to the point where it's like, okay, everything is running the way it's supposed to be, now I can pull out a guitar and start, finding spots for it.
And there is a song in the show.
We wrote a song.
Oh, okay.
There's a finale. We wrote a song for that.
Okay. I'm curious about this because improv, having worked in improv myself and knowing some of these people, as you said, in this phenomenal cast you've assembled. Speaking of which, Michael, would you pull up some of those names so we can give shout-outs to those people while I attempt to make the point I'm about to try to make?
Yes, it's double cast, as we said. Are you going to go ahead?
No, I just wanted to, before we get to that, I wanted to ask, how do you retain, or more importantly, in terms of the director, how do you stay on top of a cohesive vision and a narrative when you have a room full of improvisers who contribute so much just naturally, their natural personalities? He would have to be a stern taskmaster, I would imagine.
Actually, he is remarkably relaxed about the whole thing, and it was a joy and a playground. And what we did was, before we even started the rehearsal process of the actual show, we did nearly 2 months of improv workshops with our cast. So we had a time for everybody to learn to trust each other and find out what each other's strengths are and just play with each other and get a feel for this as a troupe. And that's also part of the interesting thing about double casting this is there are going to be times when they'll mix up. When we'll have some of the people from one cast go in with the others, it's almost like modules where there's a couple of people who should be together because we've cast them because of size things or whatever, clothing or, but for the most part, it's going to be, there are two distinct casts, neither of which is better than the other one. It's not like A or B. It's we call them apples and oranges because they're just different casts. But there will
and especially because it changes every night too.
Yes. It changes every night, and that adds to that spontaneity. It adds to the interest of putting this person in with that cast and mixing and matching. Yeah. And it's just part of the fun of it. And Jeff, it was just such a joy. I mean, everybody there, there was not a bad, I guess, apple or orange in the bunch of them. It was just great.
And to echo something that Lawrence said earlier in terms of listening, you have to be a giving person to be a good improviser because you have to listen. It's not, the bad improvisers are the showboaters.
Yes.
And the way that, that's how you improv well is you listen well. So it's obviously a very... sounds like a wonderful climate.
That was definitely a part of the casting process, is that not only were they having to be good actors and being able to read and be the character, but they also had to show that they have improv training and that they could listen and become part of the group and not be the one who's trying to, you know, take it over or force their agenda upon somebody else. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a theme that gets explored in the play.
Oh, really?
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that whole thing of selfishness versus...
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes, that's part of it. And because we have a teacher and then we have 10 people who are taking the workshop, and each one of them has their own personality and their own reason for being there, and some of them come into conflict, and some, I don't want to give it away, but there's a romantic thing that happens, and as does happen in a lot of theater companies, classes, and
more often than not.
That's right. Yeah. So it's kind of interesting to see which ones do what, and it was a fun writing process, and to see it come to life with people who are accomplished improvisers has just been just an amazing, wonderful thing.
It sounds wonderful. It's
the people she's talking about. Yes. I'm going to do this reading of the wonderful double cast, and it stars Alex Ball, Mark Beltzman, Tara Chobbs, Bill Cott, Connie Decker, Jeff Doucette, Donna Dubain, Christina Englehart, Jason Frankowitz, Angie Jarre. Kirsten Hale, Jeremy Klein, Kyle Klein, Julia Morzawa, Charlie Mount, Joel Posey, Gary Robinson, Shia Scullin, Matthew Shane, William Vandervecht, Andrew Villarreal. In my head, I was trying to say that. Timothy Walker and Bryce Mitchell Williams.
You know, and it just occurred to me, too, while Michael was reading that you have sort of built-in understudies, too, which is when you have a cast this big and you have people, good improvisers, who usually work a lot in film and television, it's nice to have that little insurance policy.
That was part of it.
Yeah.
That was definitely part of it.
Because that's the thing. It's a big thing. I don't know if this is equity waiver but it's a big
equity waiver
problem out here. Someone gets a TV show and you can't say no to them.
Right.
Just to correct, it's Corinne Decker.
Corinne Decker.
And
sorry, Miss Decker.
Joelle Posey, who is the reigning Miss Pasadena.
Oh, Joelle, so sorry, darling.
Really? Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Well, actually, Bill Cott is the reigning Mr. Burbank.
I don't doubt that.
Is it your hope that if the show is received certainly as well as I think it will be, to extend performances past October 2nd?
I would just, I would love to have it just go
and
on forever.
You've already pre-positioned that with the theater, if that happens, they're on board with that?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Because you can come back and see this show again and again. Not only will you see a different show because of the inherent improvisation that's part of it, but also because the cast changes. You want to see how the other cast would do it, you know?
Sure.
And
mm-hmm.
I think that it's something that has the repeatability of an improv show, but yet the fun structure of that kind of a play.
Is it, as far as the mounting of the show, is it more theatrical in the sense of, you know, specific lighting and lighting cues and like a theater show would be?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
But it's basic.
It's kind of a hybrid.
Right.
Yeah.
It's hybrid.
Because it takes place
in a theater.
You're sitting in the place where it's being played. Yes.
Right.
And
the
audience are like auditors.
They're auditing the class.
Right.
The class.
Oh, okay.
Right.
And
we have
some set pieces and we have props and, you know, we have lighting cues. So it's theatrical in that, certainly theatrical in that.
It sounds, I mean, I can't, just the way you're describing it, it sounds very fluid. It sounds like there's obviously not intricate or complex set changes or anything like that. So it just cooks along, which is always
a couple of intricate costume changes that you have to see.
Okay.
to believe.
Okay.
Yes.
The show we're talking about is Without Annette. This is opening tonight and next Thursday with its double cast. It's at the Whitefire Theater at 13500 Ventura Boulevard in Sherman Oaks. For tickets, plays411.com or 323-960-5773. That's plays411.com or 323-960-5773. And it sounds very exciting.
Yeah. For your listeners,
yes,
a special discount code. Place 411 if they put in 415. As
415.
A discount code, they'll get a discount.
Oh, okay. Good.
Where it all started, the 415 area code in San Francisco two little 13-year-old girls.
415. Right. Okay, so that is the access code, and we don't have to worry about being case sensitive because it's numbers. 415 at plays411.com, and that will give a discount code. Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be able to share that with our listeners. We're at that time, Michael.
Yes, we have
It's 5 minutes before the end of the show. And this at this point in the show. Oh, you know what? Before I forget, in case we run out of time, I want to throw Lawrence's website out there again to alert people to many things that he does, but most specifically the photographic memoir he just completed called Guitar with Wings. This is written by Lawrence Juber along with Marshall Terrell with a foreword by Denny Lane. And the website is Lawrence, just that, lawrencejuber.com, LAURENCEJUBER.com. Make sure we get that out there again. And it's that time. So at this point in time, we always like to ask our guests to share a performance mishap from their illustrious careers, something that went wrong, something that was funny or embarrassing or both. You have something for us?
Yes, I do, actually. as I mentioned before, I had this comedy rock and roll group called The Housewives, and we used to do a show called The Home Show on ABC. We were the house band on The Home Show, and we'd get there at 4 in the morning and do our rehearsal and then go on live TV at 7 o'clock in the morning. So one time, we went down for the rehearsal and got everything blocked out and got our mics placed. And I was the lead singer on this particular song this time and had my mic pack and the lavalier thing. And we had a little time before the show, so I was back in the green room and I thought, well, you know, maybe I should just go to the bathroom. So I go into the bathroom and I flipped my skirt up and my entire mic pack fell into the toilet. And I was like, oh no, what do I do? I'm the lead singer. I don't have a mic. So I go running out and I grab the first crew person that I found and I said, this is what happened. I'm the lead singer. We're going on in 2 minutes and my mic pack fell in the toilet. Well, he took me under his arm and he talked into his mic. He said, red alert, we have a swimmer. So they had a name for it. Apparently this had happened before. So they took me out and they like threw my clothes up and modesty's out the window at this point. They are wrapping things around and plugging things in. Lawrence is in the control booth.
We had no idea whether the mic was going to be live, and we went into national live television. She opens her mouth to sing and her voice was there.
Oh,
but it could have gone the other way.
Yeah.
And if you look back at I've looked at the tape from the episode, and it's like, you can't tell anything happened. And but for those like 5 minutes before, it was complete pandemonium in the whole studio.
Wow. I used to do warm-up for the Jenny Jones show. This was a talk show in the 90s. And I used to do studio audience warm-up beforehand. And all of these people who were on television, most of them for the first time and most of them for the only time they would be on television, we got swimmers all the time. They're just completely unaware of it. It's just a completely, new foreign thing and they don't think about it. And that was also coupled with the fact that we would hear so much conversation that was taking place in the dressing rooms that maybe we weren't supposed to hear.
Well, maybe I should be glad that the microphone pack fell in the toilet before anything else happened.
Exactly. Lawrence, do you have a tale for us?
So Wings were on tour December 1979 in England, and Paul had a new single, Wonderful Christmas Time, that became kind of a Christmas standard, but that we were debuting it on the tour. And first show, I opened my mouth to sing the backing vocals, and nobody told me that they were going to drop plastic snow on us. So I opened my mouth, and I got a mouthful of plastic snow. The entire front row completely cracked. Spitting snow out.
And that's hard to get out of your mouth.
It's hard to be, it's hard to be kind of a cool rock star.
Right.
With a mouthful of plastic snow.
Oh, that's hysterical.
Holy cow.
And the other thing, too, is that at that particular point in time, it was the nose full of snow that was probably the bigger issue for many rock stars at that particular point in history.
Oh, boy. But how delightful to have the two of you here. And thank
really
you for
wonderful.
Contributing to the theater scene here in Los Angeles.
This sounds, happy to do
again.
It.
This sounds so phenomenal, this production without Annette. And once again, this is at the Whitefire Theater in Sherman Oaks. Tickets, plays411.com or 323-960-5773. Discount code for our listeners is 415.
That's right.
And it's every Thursday from now through October 2nd.
And with that extensive, that wonderful list of improvisers that we have, see it and then see it again, because you'll see, as we mentioned, a completely different show, not only because of the different cast, but also because by its very improvisational nature.
And then we want to just give one last plug to 3D Theatricals and their production of Damn Yankees at the historic Fullerton's Plummer Auditorium. And that officially opens July 12th. It's grand opening night on July 12th. Plays there through the 27th and then travels cross town to South Bay's Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center. Plays there August 2nd through the 10th. And for ticket information, go to their website, 3DTShows.com.
And Lawrence, would you remind us, when is your appearance at the Grammy Museum?
This coming Monday, July 14th.
Okay.
8 p.m.
And information on that is at Lawrence.
It's on my website.
Yeah. LawrenceJuber.com. Okay, great. Wonderful. Such a pleasure having both of you.
Absolutely.
Flew
Thank
by
you very
today.
Much.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Thank
and,
you.
And nice to be with you, Paul.
Yes, and we will not be on the air next week.
We won't.
Because I will be too busy aging. But we will be back the week following. So,
do we need to say one more thing?
The website for the play is actually withoutannette.info.
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah. And remember, Annette is the woman's name, as in Funicello. Not in this particular case. There's no relation, but just withoutannette.info.
Yes. Right.
Great.
All right.
Thank you both.
See you on the radio.
Thank you.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley. Right here on LA Talk Radio.